take some testimony on a couple of bills. I'm going to move House Bill 2619 to the head of the schedule and call Representative Starr. This is the first time I've had that privilege in this session of the legislature to invite my son to come to the witness stand. And
congratulations. Thank you kindly. I appreciate that.
Hopefully it won't be the last. For the record, Representative Bruce Starr, House District 3 in Washington County. You have before you House Bill 2619, which is a bill that I introduced on behalf of the Substitute Teachers Association. As you will recall, last session, we modified the substitute teachers' salary schedule. We moved it so that they would receive 85% that average teacher salary. In doing that, we also, that was for the first 10 days of their employment in a teaching situation. What they found was that in some situations they would teach more than those 10 days, and then they would get 1/90th of the, I'm getting lost here, 1/90th of the beginning teacher salary in the school district. And what we found was that after 10 days in some districts, they would actually earn less than those first 10 days. And so what we've done in this bill is to put in this a small line that would correct that. This bill came through the House Education Committee, was then sent to Ways and Means, which it came through and it passed the House floor in a wide margin. So I would urge your support of House Bill 2619.
All right. You have a question? I'm trying to find the
actually, it only is in effect in three districts. Has a relatively minor, if not negligible, fiscal impact. I mean, a few hundreds of dollars, really.
That's helpful, and I've been handed a printed bulletin here about Fossil, Annex, and Paisley.
That's right.
All right. Well,
and those are pretty small.
And we're not asking that substitute teachers make more than what a beginning teacher would make. If you include what a beginning teacher makes in their benefit package, that substitute teachers don't get that benefit, so they would still make less than what a beginning teacher would make even in those districts.
And the reason I asked information about the impact was when we increased the rate, it did have a substantial impact on school districts.
Right.
And created a hole, I know, in the pump. Suddenly they had. I'm glad to see that only secondary.
Yeah.
Any further questions? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing. And you.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2619. We have an amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Brown moves House Bill 2619 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Clerk call.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 2619 moves the floor with a due pass. Senator Starr will carry. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3174. I'm sorry, I got my.
Morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead. Person to the left of me looks familiar. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Randall Edwards, state representative from House District 15, representing portions of Northeast and Southeast Portland. I just wanted to briefly touch on House Bill 3174. I was a sponsor of this bill and sort of give you just a general feel for what the bill is doing and why I introduced it with some folks, and it again has bipartisan support. I introduced the House Bill 3174 as a small bill that I see that returns some balance of power between the branches of government, between the legislative branch and the executive branch. Under this bill, state agencies would no longer be allowed to directly pre-session file legislation. They would have to work with a member of the legislature, an interim committee, or go through the governor's office to get a concept drafted and introduced prior to session. I asked DAS to give me a list of how many bills were introduced by agencies this last pre-session filed last year, and over nearly 400 bills were pre-session filed by state agencies. This bill wouldn't prohibit state agencies from bringing an idea to the legislature. It just requires some buy-in by the legislature or directly by the governor. The current system gives the legislative function of introducing legislation, in my opinion, to non-elected officials. Again, in researching why we gave states this power, it was seen as a way to get legislative committees something to work on when the session began. That, to me, in my opinion, doesn't seem necessary, particularly in light of term limits. As you know, thousands of bills are introduced each session. I believe that this bill will help improve the legislative process by preventing duplicative bills with members or having bills introduced that go nowhere. It will also give the legislative buy-in before session, as a legislator or a legislative committee who sponsored the measure will likely be more willing to work for the bill's passage. In most states, and I researched this with the National Conference of State Legislators, most states, the power to introduce legislation is reserved to the legislative branch. Most, when you look around, the NCSL report that many states, again, reserve this function for elected officials. As a sponsor of this bill, and Representative Starr is here to talk about a discussion we had in our committee, it was my intention, as well as others of who sponsored this bill, to exclude the six statewide elected officials from the bill itself. That is, that statewide officials who are elected would be able to pre-session file as they currently are. However, it was brought to my attention by legislative counsel after we passed the bill that it was drafted incorrectly and that the statewide electives are prevented from pre-session filing. I spoke with the members of the Rules Committee and they suggested that we fix the bill here, and the dash one before you does that. It basically defines the statewide as being exempt from this prohibition of pre-session filing. I think the basic point there is that these folks are statewide, they're elected, unlike what initially the bill was intended to do, is to make sure the state agencies, as I was discussing it, the committee was understanding it, are those under the governor's auspice and therefore do not have an elected official on top. I think this is a small change to the bill, which I believe was, in my opinion, the committee, and I believe the committee's opinion was the intent of the bill was to give the elected statewide the ability to pre-session file rather than to have to go through the governor as the bill would force them to. And again, you've got to realize these people are elected on platforms, they're of different party, it wouldn't make any sense for them to have to go through the governor. It gives them the power to do this. I hope you can adopt the A1 amendment and adopt the bill, because I do think it's a good bill.
Questions?
Thanks. I'm a little slow this morning. Representative Edwards, I guess my question would be, if we're allowing agencies to have bills drafted through the governor's office or through a legislature, aren't we simply adding another hoop, another layer of bureaucracy here? If they can go directly to legislative council now, and now they have to go to the governor's office, most of the agency heads are appointed by the governor, aren't we really just adding a layer of government hoop?
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, I don't believe that. I believe what we're trying to do is, again, the power of initiating legislation is actually a legislative function, in my opinion, and therefore you're saying in this case that an agency has to go through the governor's office, and when the bill is printed, assuming he blesses it, and quite frankly, they do that right now, except that the agency's name is on the bill. Let's say the technicality, but quite frankly, they do screen it, and maybe someone from the governor's office can look at that. But I think that gives the governor buy-in to what's being proposed, so that we as legislators know that he has blessed this bill, or she, whoever future governors may be. And I don't think it's an additional layer, because I think if you're going to go to a legislator and ask them to pre-session file, I think all of us have been asked by an agency to do that in some way or another or some fashion. And I think I personally take that as a personal commitment that I'm interested in the legislation. So I don't think that's an extra layer for them.
Okay.
Thank you. Representative Bruce Starr, for the record. I'm just here to back Randall up, especially on the DAP 1 amendments. I think that when we passed it out on the House side, it was understood that the elected statewide were excluded. After we did that, we found out that they were not. And we decided to ask that it be fixed over here rather than just send it back to the House committee. So I would just urge your adoption of the DAP 1 amendments so that the little problem can be fixed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have two other witnesses, Susan Fosterman and Raleigh Westrock.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Susan Klosterman. I'm Assistant Director with the Department of Administrative Services, and I just wanted to bring you some information this morning. I think you have a handout in front of you about how the process currently works that leads up to agency pre-session filing of bills. This process is coordinated by the Director's Office and the Department of Administrative Services, and our process includes all executive branch state agencies except for the statewide elected officials. We do, though, share and exchange information and do some coordination there. I wanted to make two points right off. I wanted to emphasize that our process does include a thorough review by both staff, the director's office, the budget and management division, and also the governor's policy advisor twice during our process. The review takes place and all three sign off before the concept or idea is submitted to legislative council for drafting, and then again after we get the draft bill from legislative council and actually pre-session file the bill. So the governor's office is signing off on those bills and the ideas twice. Agencies submit bills for a number of different reasons. One reason is to support the governor's budget, and under this bill, DAS will continue to retain that authority. Also, they submit bills or legislative measures to comply with federal regulations and laws. They may have some directions from prior legislatures and have done some interim work and are bringing some results either by work from the work they've done with their stakeholders or with interim task forces or legislative committees. And a lot of their ideas are made to increase effectiveness and efficiency of government operations. It's our understanding, Mr. Chairman, that if House Bill 3174 becomes law, we would use the governor's authority to pre-session file measures along with the authority retained by DAS. One last thing. Our review is done for a number of different reasons. We look at the central level at all of the ideas submitted by agencies to make sure there isn't duplication or conflict or inconsistency, so we give it that statewide perspective. For example, if several different agencies were to file an idea about public contracting, we would look at all those ideas and consolidate those into one bill and file one bill with the primary carrier. We also ensure that there's alignment with the governor's policies and the governor's budget. And then we also ensure that the administrative mechanisms are in place to make those ideas work. Our position on this bill, Mr. Chairman, is neutral with our understanding that we would use the governor's authority and the DAS authority to pre-session file bills. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Raleigh Westbrook. I'm Chief of Staff of the Oregon Treasury. And I'd like to address the area that Representative Edwards identified with the Dash 1 amendments, and we strongly support the Dash 1s, which would exclude the statewide officers from this bill. I think it's having to file through either the governor or through a legislature the statewide elected officials' business, I think is a level of restriction. I believe it's a burden on the legislature and the individual legislators that we have to work with. The treasurer's business is rather complex, and it deals with the financial well-being of the state. The treasurer is the chief financial officer of the state of Oregon. And to have to mediate that with the governor's office or to find a legislator that understands that particular business could be restrictive. We think that bringing the bill directly to the legislature, if the constitutional office allows those issues, addressing the financial well-being of the state to be addressed at the level that they should be addressed, and that's with the legislature as a whole. And so we would strongly recommend that the Dash 1s be considered if we could. One of the notes that I had made, you know, in coming up here was that you would have the constitutional officers having to shop their legislature to various legislators. That would, if you got turned down once or you got turned down twice, you know, it may take you a while before you find the person who understands your issues and can take the time to get into them, and not everybody has a financial background or a financial understanding, so it may take some shopping. I mean, that's sort of a detail in a statewide constitutional officer as opposed to bringing it forward and having it discussed by the entire legislature. The same thing with the governor. What happens if you have statewide officials, constitutional officers that are of a different party and may be antagonistic to the governor or vice versa somewhere down the road? Understand that could never happen in this legislature, of course, but in some future legislature. It does, I think, put a burden on both the legislature and the statewide constitutional officers, as well as the governor, who would have to mediate and, you know, to evaluate. So it's our recommendation that the Dash 1s would be embraced and excluded, as was the original intent of the bill. And I'm available for any questions. I'll be short and brief.
Mr. Chair, actually, it's not a question for these two, but it actually would be for Representative Edwards, and I didn't think about it earlier, and that is, if his intent is to sort of take away power or whatever from the agencies, doesn't it make more sense to have this happen at the outset, i.e. at the requesting the bill as opposed to kind of filing? I mean, again, the bill's already drafted and folks are ready to go. Time crunches are on, and you know, if an agency can't find a legislator to assist, they're simply going to go to the governor's office. So to me, if you're really trying to do some rebalancing here, it would make more sense to do that at the outset of the initiation of the drafting request. I'm going to be gone until the session. So.
And we will have to close our hearing. Rogers, do you have a
question before we do, please?
I saw Roger walk in and I.
Well, I guess I'd ask both of you, is there a system seems to have been working. Is there a need for legislation?
Mr. Chair, I'll go ahead and jump. It works very well for us. We don't file that many bills, quite frankly. Look back at the session. I think we filed, excluding the budget bill, I think we filed like 13 or 14 bills. There's not a lot of them. Most of them are very technical. The system works very well for us. We work with the Attorney General's office to do initial drafting. Then we coordinate with legislative counsel. It does get review in that way. And I don't know, I think it works very well for the Treasurer's office. And again, we do not file very many bills.
Make it more a practice just after the next election. How about for the
Mr. Chairman, from the buyer, the same holds true for us. We've worked out all of the, it's an elaborate and complex process, but it works well, and I think that the central review, both at the Director's Office, Budget Management Division, and the Governor's Office, twice in the process, there's a lot to coordinate and present issues that are at a level that needs legislative review, and that is a coordinated and consistent approach.
Maybe ask the same question of Greg, since he's here.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming in.
How about the legislative council? Is there a crying need to fix something?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I don't think we're in a position to comment on the merits or demerits of this particular proposal as a practical matter.
That's what I was asking.
If this bill becomes law, what we will do is when the governor provides us with the bills he chooses to file. We'll label them governor rather than Department of Agriculture, Department of Forestry, or whatever as we do now. But that's going to be the only change in our procedure caused by this bill.
I suspect that that might be, it wouldn't be a technical problem, but some of the agencies may not especially like you having the bills labeled for governor's bill.
Thank you very much. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3174 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2373. And invite thank you. I'll stop this bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, State Representative, District 28. Before you, House Bill 2373, which was pre-session filed by myself at the request of a constituent of Representative Gianellis, but a very good friend of mine, Mr. William Van Dyke. This bill, in its original form, would have required a shellfish tag for the harvest of any shellfish on the Oregon coast. In discussion through in the House and to get support from the coastal community, we decided that we would amend the bill to make it only a shellfish tag would be issued with a fishing license at no additional charge, and it would only be needed for the harvesting of clams. It doesn't talk of crabs or mussels. With that amendment, the bill came through the House with a 43-8 vote. It was supported or not opposed by the majority of the coastal community. There was one no vote by a member of the coastal caucus on the House side. The reason this bill is brought forward is simply that it's particularly evident in Oregon versus Washington, but it also in California somewhat. But in Washington, harvest clams, you have to buy a clam harvesting tag, which costs, I believe, $20 a day. That's for residents and non-residents alike. In Oregon, there has been no requirement to have any license or tag of any kind for the harvesting of clams. So, and in Washington, the season is only open every other day. So that people in Washington, especially along in the northern Oregon coast, would be coming into Oregon and harvesting the clams for free and you know, thinking they've gone to the bank and picking up money or something because it was such a great deal for them to come across in Oregon where they had to pay, and then Oregon residents had to pay to go into Washington. So this will help to equalize that issue. Also, we have a commitment from the Department of Fish and Wildlife that some of the extra money, the new money generated from these new license sales, would be go toward studying the shellfish issue, because many, for those of you who are clammers such as myself, would know that many of the last years during the prime clamming tides, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has been forced to close the clamming season because of toxins in the clams. And no one really knows why those are there, or if they're new, or if they've always been there, they just now have a better job studying them and finding them. And so hopefully some of the money generated will go toward trying to find out why that is and if there's something that can be done about it so that we can have a longer clamming harvest every year and we won't have the problem of the toxins coming in and having to close the season. With that, it's a fairly simple bill. A person could either buy an annual angling license or a daily angling license. The daily angling license, I believe, costs about $6 per day. And with that, every angling license sold will be a shellfish tag endorsement on the license so that a person would not have to go do something special other than have the angling license. We put a starting date of it of January 1st, 2000. That will allow the department a chance to get this new license developed. You know, basically they'll have to put a new line on the license saying that angler or shellfish license or tag endorsement, whatever we want to call it. And also that way people will not have to be starting if we didn't have an effective date. Whenever we sign a die, 90 days later, the law would take effect, and people from that point on would have to have a K or a license. So by putting an effective date of January 1st on it, it gives the department a chance that people know, and when the new regulations come out, it'll be printed in that. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions if the committee has any.
Any questions? Lee?
So this is essentially, Roger, what we're trying to do is to trying to get Washington State residents to pay a little bit of the cost if they come across the river to clam. Not crab, I should.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer. Yes, and Oregon residents will also have to buy a license now. They don't currently have to. So it will affect Oregon residents also.
Oh, I see. Because you have to have at least a fishing license.
This bill will require a fishing license before you can harvest clams.
Like that. No way of knowing how many people that's going to catch up, how many clammers we have that don't fish.
Mr. Chair, if you've ever been to Gerhardt on a prime clamming tide, it looks like West Portland. And I don't know how many of those people are fishermen. I suspect a great number of those people are also fishermen and also already have a fishing license. But I'm sure there are some that who aren't. So yes, it will get some people.
Mr. Chair, the fiscal statement states that the Department of Fish and Wildlife estimates 35,000 to 50,000 resident clam fishers, many of whom probably hold annual fishing licenses, and they don't make any estimate as to the number that don't, but then they do break down the additional revenue that would be garnered if there were for the two different numbers of additional clam fishers that would have to buy a license.
Thank you. Chairman Sarve, members of the committee, my name is Phil Rollator. I'm the assistant to the director of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I have a written statement, which I'll not read. But just to let you know that since 1983, there have been seven different bills to require some kind of shellfish tag or the angling license, as this bill does, in order to shellfish. Because Representative Beyer has brought this bill before you today, you know what the fate of all those bills was. The main support for all of the seven bills that have been brought forward, as Representative Beyer said, is from the disproportionate non-resident fees in Washington. It costs us $20 for an Oregon resident to go to clam for one tide in Washington State, and Washington State or people from elsewhere come down here and clam free. We also got a lot of resistance from people who felt that clamming and crabbing were the only free things left in Oregon in the angling area. But when you start questioning people, it was really crabbing that they were focusing on. Crabbing has developed into a very family-oriented activity in Oregon. You bring your children, your family, the cousins down, you just clam off the dock, or you take your boat, I mean crab off the dock, take your boat or whatever. That would remain free under this bill. So we support this bill. We, as Representative Beyer said, we would use the additional money, the $40,000 a year, that we estimate this will generate for additional shellfish research.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up we're going to close the public hearing.
Going to open the hearing and work, or actually we're going to open the work session on executive appointments and ask that David Ripma come.
come forward. If you could tell us about yourself and why you want to serve here.
Thank you, Senator. Yes, my name is David Ripma. I have an undergraduate degree in electrical engineering. I'm a member of the Oregon State Bar. I practice as a patent lawyer, which is helping inventors get patents. I was elected to the Troutdale City Council in 1993. I have served 2 years on the Planning Commission in Troutdale before that. I'm also president of the Troutdale Historical Society. That's just a bit of background. I've agreed to serve on the Energy Facility Siting Council because I believe I can contribute to the work it does. The siting of pipelines and power transmission lines and other major energy facilities is important to Oregon, and technical, regulatory, local issues are always going to be involved, and my background includes technical, legal, and local government experience and should enable me to understand the issues and render fair decisions. This is my first time before a Senate committee. I have no further prepared introduction, so I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
I think certainly you acted in your community and in your profession, and I think that bodes well for. Fighting Council, so appreciate you appearing and act on the appointment at this point because we're short a committee member. So we're going to for the next person.
Should I leave?
No.
I'd be happy to wait if it would.
We will have enough members here to vote if Roger can say
Lee.
Senator Miller will be here at 9 o'clock, so we should have a quorum and be able to.
All right, I'll wait until that happens. Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on to State Board of Psychologist Examiners and Susan Mosley.
Chair, everybody. I'm Susan Mosley.
Tell us about yourself.
I've lived in the state of Oregon for 20 years. I have a PhD in psychology from the University of Oregon and was licensed by the state of Oregon to practice psychology. I have been informed and involved with the State Board of Psychologist Examiners over the years. Served as an oral examiner for them on a number of occasions. And have been a member of the Oregon Psychological Association for most of the past 20 years, served 2 terms, which was almost 6 years, on the Oregon Psychological Association Ethics Committee, and maintain a full-time private practice, as well as doing a lot of service work to schools, church, and other community organizations. I believe in service, and I'm turning 50, and I think it's time to give back to the profession.
None.
Coming in appearing before us, and we will act on the appointment when we have a quorum.
It's a pleasure.
Okay. We're going to close the hearing, and the committee will stand at ease for the moment until we move too quickly this morning.
Not for me.
Oh.
Sometimes you just have to be there. What was that last?
I feel pretty damn this morning. I got in and put on the airport at 3 o'clock. And so on.
That's okay. I don't mind. My Churchill cousin. Oh, good, eh?
Yeah. I spent part of the summer of 1946 with him.
Part of this book.
That should be a fun read for you.
Back in New York?
D.C.
Oh, this is a little campaign trip?
Well, I'm not a D.C. country.
I didn't know how that is. My sense has always been, and I've always been a bit of a skeptic. But I'm a day, huh? No, that's fine. I guess. Hey, buyer.
All right. I apologize. I left. No.
Is you're here to testify on that? Let's do it.
Well, public hearing on House Bill 3168 and Representative Atkinson.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jason Atkinson, State Representative, District 51. Again, I apologize for my tardiness. House Bill 3168 is a bill that I'm proud of. I, as you probably noticed, it came out of the House 58-0, which either means that this bill is genius or that it perhaps doesn't do very much. I'd actually like to think it's a combination of the first. This bill, very simply, was the first bill I introduced, the consortium of conservation bills. What this bill now does is it allows the Indian tribes to work with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife regarding the STEP program. Originally, to give you a brief history of the bill, this bill would have allowed the raising of steelhead in tribal ponds. And the reason that that was important to me is that we seem to have an opportunity to do two things I'm interested in, which are return steelhead and allow children to brag about it. Well, after bringing the tribes together with the agency, I said, how do I best accomplish those two goals? And working with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and with the tribes, we came up with the language of the bill, which had a bit of a change in it, which would allow the department to establish a pilot program to involve the tribes, which is my education part of it, to raise juvenile steelhead under the STEP program, which is the salmon and trout enhancement program. All of this basically boils down into one thing. First of all, we already have collaboration between the tribes and the agency. What my bill allows them to do is to formalize the educational angle of the STEP program to involve children in the raising of salmon and steelhead. And that is the flavor of which I bring to you today. And I'm proud that that if we can do those two things and return steelhead and allow children to brag about it, that's what this bill's interest is. So with that, I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
If I may, Representative, does DFW need authority to do this? Or is this just sort of the intent is to give them sort of a friendly direction?
Yeah, you're right. It's friendly direction. What we did is we allowed the bill, the original intent of the bill was to allow the tribes to work with the agency to use tribal ponds, which if you're familiar with the Hatchbox program, would have been the second phase, which was my original intent. The first phase of the Hatchbox program has to do with fry. This would actually be smolt size inside of a tribal pond. That we found that language to be a little bit too narrow, and which actually would discount some of the programs that are already involved. So I worked with the agency and said, now what kind of direction could I give you that would have the educational element? When I was a young child, one of the programs we had with the Karuk tribe on the Klamath River was the establishment of these steelhead ponds. And the children were the ones that took care of the ponds. And so after all summer of raising these fry from this size up to fish size and allowing them to return or leave, 4 years later the fish would return and the kids took all the credit for it. So that was the direction. And working with Joe Rolater of the agency, he said, you know, if we would just fix it this way and leave it loose enough with your direction, we would probably be able to keep doing what we're doing, but also build the educational element or the bragging rights, rather, into it. And so I agreed that would work. And so the short answer to my long answer is yes, provide direction.
Had they thought of it, they could do it now, but this just points them in the direction.
Yeah, correct.
All right, making it permissive to doesn't have a big fiscal impact.
No. No, again, my whole intent on I have several bills dealing with fish, and my premise is the following. First of all, return fish and allow kids to be involved. It really doesn't matter about lawsuits. It really doesn't really matter about millions of dollars in the hatcheries. If you don't get children to buy into the program, it probably will not work. And I'm very proud to tell you that this is the first story that I introduced, and it was one of the first things that got me interested in politics. When my grandfather used to take me to these tribal ponds, he asked me, "What do I want to be when I grow up?" And I said, "Well, I'd like to be an Indian." I mean, they have, you know, they deal in fish all day, and I was very interested in this all the way from being a child. But it had that element to it. It had the element of that these children would raise these fish, let the fish go, and then brag that these have ownership, that these were their fish. And for that reason, I worked with the agency and the tribes. And actually, that's probably one of the other strengths of the bill. This is the time when I have the tribes and the agency together on one bill. So if it's for direction, it's good. But if it saves or returns some fish, it's good. If it allows children to brag that they are the ones that return the fish, it's better.
Educate children. Be useful. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And again, I apologize for my tardiness.
With that, we're going to close the hearing and recess the committee for the moment. And we have up. On house bills, on the apartments. Open the work session on executive appointments.
Mr. Chair, are you in there?
Sure.
Here you go.
Oh, I'm sorry. You have to
sure. Mr. Chair, I would move that the committee recommend the approval of the governor's appointments in block of David Lippman to the Energy Facility Siting Council. Let's see. Susan Mosley to the State Board of Psychological Examiners, and the reappointment of Rosalind Elms Sutherland to the Energy Facility Siting Council, David Sittler to the Employment Relations Board, and Charles Simpson to the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners.
Senator Barr has moved the appointment or reappointment of David Rittman. The appointment of David Rittman to Energy Facility Siting Council, the reappointment of Rosalind Elms Sutherland to the Energy Facility Siting Council, the appointment of Susan Mosley to the State Board of Psychologist Examiners, the reappointment of David Sittler to the Employment Relations Board, and reappointment of Charles Simpson to the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners, recommending to the floor with the recommendation that the appointment be affirmed or confirmed. Discussion. Mr. Chairman. Senator Miller.
I had to read in the clip last week a op-ed piece by Russell Sadler indicated that I was still the chairman of this committee and conducting things in a very rude fashion. And I recognize that Mr. Sadler is not usually long on the facts, but I surely hope that your interrogation today went smoothly, cordial. And I certainly second the nomination.
Thank you for your
well, to see where I'm just for you.
The clerk called the roll.
Aye.
I vote aye. Votes aye. The motion is carried, and the nominations or the appointments will move to the floor for confirmation. Thank you kindly. That we close the work session on executive appointments and move to a work session on House Bill 3174. We have the Dash 1 amendments, which correct the minor problem.
You sure you want to move this bill?
Oh.
I was in search of a good reason why we needed this statute.
Is probably not doing all that much, but it was support partisan fashion, and the people who testified said they were neutral on it. I think
Yes.
I know that during the interim, in talking with him, I regret that I mentioned testimony, if there was some from legislative counsel.
This could be a suggestion that there is slow down really the flow and the dominance of agency introduction. Just seemed to overwhelm both counsel and the process in the meeting.
And perhaps would cause them to actually seek some understanding from legislators before they flood us with a whole host of bills. The testimony that we had didn't go to that issue particularly, but was the Dash 1 amendments,
the authority back for the statewide office holders.
Statewide elected officials to retain the
I don't think it will do anything. But beyond that, I think there is a philosophical point of our system of government that we have now is the boards and commissions system. And I kind of wonder if that doesn't set it up a little bit, you know, you're denying them the access to directly to the legislature. And frankly, they'll get it anyway. I mean, there's not going to be any problem with if somebody wants to introduce something, finding the legislator to do it for them. I mean, all of us do it predominantly as a courtesy. But the real issue, I guess, is should everything go through the governor with the exception of the state elected office holders? And I appreciate the concern. I've had the same one, but I don't think it'll change stuff. And we had the testimony from the DAS staff was that's the way they do it now anyway, so they're neutral on the bill because it doesn't change their practice.
And it seems to me in that, Mr. Chair, that the council isn't here, but I think there's something about this is part of our branch operation. It's our council. They are not necessarily council to all of the agencies for assistance in drafting legislation. Perhaps what they could be doing is seeking assistance from their own attorney general. A workload issue and probably a responsibility issue.
If I may.
Obliterated all that.
Well, the only distinction that it makes, Senator, is it pulls off the statewide elected officials. Out of the bill.
Oh,
it gives them direct access. The others are going through the governor, and the normal process is that they do go through the AG. They have their bills preliminarily drafted. Or they can suggest to the step process is they have to under the current government, and I don't think this has changed since I've been around here, is that they have to propose a concept to the governor and get his approval in the spring before the session, and if he agrees with the concept, they're authorized then to work with their attorney and legislative counsel in preparing the bill, which again, he has to approve before they can introduce. That's current. This doesn't really change that. They pointed out, our staff pointed out, that it's legislative under the statute. Currently, they have direct access under the Constitution. The governor is authorized to propose measures directly.
I somewhat agree with you about the concern about it,
I'll move the Dash 1.
Fine. No objection.
No objection. So ordered. Senator Miller moves House Bill 3174 to the floor as amended with a new pass recommendation. Clerk, call or roll.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. I received the necessary majority
House Bill 3174 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Miller, would you
send me through? Chair, it will carry. All righty.
House Bill 2373.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Barr.
I would move House Bill 2373A to the floor for the due pass.
Senator Barr has moved House Bill 2373A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2373, I'm receiving necessary majority. Is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Starr will carry.
Is that shellfish? Is that
open up a question on House Bill 3168.
Oops, this is the wrong bill.
3168, I move House Bill 3168 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Bill 3168 A has been moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Not clerk call the roll.
Aye.
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 Do you know what that one is? I know that one very quickly. That increased the fee.
Right. Yeah. What do you
want to do? That's not a big deal. I intentionally moved the last one, thinking it was the one we just voted on, but that's okay. I just want to make sure that Senator Miller's
concerned. Yeah, no, I
know that increased the fishing licenses.
But what it does is
creates a new tag, right?
Yeah. It creates a tag with a shellfish stamp on it.
To buy a fishing license.
But not having been here earlier, was there a testimony on this?
There was. And one of the principal things regarding this is that 35,000 to 60,000.
We already did your business, Simmons.
Yeah, we did. I'm
just
sorry about that.
Were you shellfish? You weren't shellfish, were you? You're Indian fishing, accents and stuff?
Yeah.
We took care of that. Did you look for the fishing license for shellfish? You think that was a good idea?
Poke them in the eye. All right. Clerk, call the roll. Let's see. We got that.
We already voted on it.
No, we haven't gotten to 2619 yet.
We did that. They did that.
Oh, you did that for you?
Yeah.
Well, shoot.
Have we done? Have we?
You've done everything. On
I
your
think
goodness. We're done.
Tooth carrier.
On.
All right. We'll let Senator Barr carry 3168. And with that, I'm on.
We're going to meet at 8.
Adjourned. The Committee on Rules.